You're listening to Over the Line on Galway Bay FM, the sporting sound of Galway.
I'm delighted to be joined by an old friend of ours, I think a friend of everybody's, and a man who has produced a beautiful book celebrating the lives and the footballing careers of Sean Purcell and Frank Stockwell. Reluctant, Jim, I think, to call them the terrible twins.
Yes.
But Jim Carney joins us. And I have to say to you, your nephew, Kieran, who we were talking about a minute ago, I'll paraphrase him now, but he sort of suggested that this book had to be written.
Yeah.
Because if it wasn't written now, it might never appear, and that you were the man to write it, and
well,
he is your nephew.
Well, if I didn't write it, Jerry, who would really? You know,
exactly.
I'm old enough. You know, I'm in my mid-70s now. I mean, no young journalist would have known them. Yeah, I started going to football early. You know, I was at a club match in '59. I was nine. I saw Frank play in '63 when the 1963 All Ireland Galway team, who were a terrific team, played some great football in the final, but one goal went in, and goals win games. So. But everybody felt afterwards, would we have won the three in a row if we didn't win 63? Would we have won the three in a row if we didn't win 63? And then in 62, I was at the two championship matches Sean played. He scored two goals in the second half when we were in trouble against a very physical Leitrim team in Duggan Park, Ballinasloe. I've taken to the match. And in the Connacht final then, after we got through, it was an eventful game that's gone down in history. It's known that final 62 was known as the day the crossbar broke, and during the crossbar break I did so much research into finding out exactly how long it was, because all the papers had different accounts, but seemingly the consensus is it was 7 minutes. Within that period then, within the break where everybody sat back, Galway had, unfortunately, a disastrous change of selection, because Big Frank Evers, you know, who played Inter-Firmus football up to 1972 in Galway, he was most of the time in Damascus and all that, he was a bit of a double for Omar Sharif, and I communicate but email to him now, he's 89 I think, in Vancouver. But Evers was having a blinder on Gerry O'Malley because he was very physical. The master Sean Purcell was quoted actually once as saying Gerry O'Malley was the best opponent he ever met. So Evers was playing well on him, and he was taken off. He was taken off controversially, and I think John Dunn was overruled by another man who was a very powerful voice in Galway GA at the time, and that, and so when Evers, a young Mick Reynolds came on his place, but when Evers was gone, Roscommon switched to O'Malley to midfield, and he got to set up a goal, got a few points. We were well in front, and they won it by a point. It was Sean's last game, the day the crossbar broke. You know, Aidan, the big goalkeeper, who played Roscommon at the time, he became head of the Botanic Gardens afterwards. His name just slips my mind at the moment now. Aidan Brady, and Aidan was a Connacht goalkeeper as well, along with Jack Mahan. So Aidan swung off the crossbar when the young Seamus Layden was scoring a point. And all that. So it's amazing, really, because all the people who remember it, they never call it the 62 kind of final. They say the day the crossbar broke.
Yeah,
well, that's the beauty of sport. You know, things happen.
But what people, you refer to it, Jim, as the day the crossbar broke.
Yeah.
But what people of younger vintage than us will not realise is you said you put a lot of research into this book.
But to find out the detail.
But it was all printed research, Jim.
Yes,
very little. There was no video reference. There was no TV coverage, obviously.
There was one still photograph, not a great picture. Yeah,
a couple of photographs, that was it. Even to get photographs at the time was a huge operation. At a time, I suppose, Jim, in the 60s, the only way you'd find out about a match, unless it was on, was no local radio.
Yes, on Michael O'Hare,
or Radio Éireann, was to go to the game. And the crowds that followed those games, Jim, were massive, I would say.
Yeah, well, Galway, I mean, I was in Tuam Stadium in 64. Galway versus Mayo, which was maybe one of the great rivalries in football. It was a healthy rivalry then. It's not like that now, but I think social media is responsible for that. But that time, going to games in Castlebar between Galway and Mayo, or going to games in Tuam Stadium, and there were great games in Pearse Stadium too between them, there was a good rivalry with Roscommon. It kind of wasn't warm, really, I think. There was great respect there and all that. Roscommon is a mad passion for football. They won their last All-Ireland, maybe 44, whatever it was. And, you know, it's going to be difficult for them to win another, as it is for maybe 27 or 28 other counties. But Tuam Stadium, opened, the stand was opened in Tuam Stadium in 1964 on the day that Galway played Mayo.
They started pulling it down today, Jim.
Well, yeah, it's extraordinary. Yeah, it was open there. It didn't cost much. But the official attendance was given anyway at 30,000 because that was the limit. There were no health and safety regulations, but still they had it on that. But then it was changed and people said 35,000 and that. But actually, up to 6,000 people came in late. They broke down the gates. They had to. They were outside for a long time. I was there. I actually saw the drama because, you know, I was 14 playing juvenile football in Milltown and everything, mad for I could go to the games. Actually, the day the crossbar broke, I thumbed a lift to Castlebar from Mrs. Farrher's sweet shop up on Sheridan's Hill in Milltown, despite an order from my mother that I was not to thumb. But I'd just say this, if I could, because the Times was in it. Everybody thumbed all over Ireland. I thumbed to Dublin, wants to see a playing the Abbey Theatre, waiting for God, or Peter O'Toole, and everybody was thumbing. And like 61 the year before, Bob, the young Bob Dylan, started hitching from either Duluth or Hibbing. He hitched all the way across America. He got to New York. He went looking for his hero, Woody Guthrie, and the rest is musical and culture history. It all started out by thumbing from one side of an earth to America.
And it's interesting, you talk about the rivalry you got with me. The many people you would speak to from that three in a row team, and the many scribes around the country, were always of the impression that Mayo were actually the second best team in the country.
They were during that time. Around 65, I'd say the third best team in the country was the Galway junior team. They won the All-Ireland with Coley McDonough and Liam Salmon, who I think had an injury there or something like that. They were a fantastic team altogether. And really around the country in the mid-60s, the glory of the three in a row is undisputed. Kerry were weak then. They had one bad selection after another. The good cornerback and they play in midfield like Tony Sullivan and all those. One year, Pat Griffin was the only forward who played well against us, but we were so good. Leinster was poor around that time. Meath made a run at it for sure. Meath didn't get a kick of the ball off us in the 66 final, but they won in 67 and maybe the worst All-Ireland ever played, you know. Carr couldn't win an All-Ireland at the time, big physical man. And the Ulster Championship in the 60s threw up Cavan a while. Donegal struggled to make a breakthrough and a few others. But really, there was Galway and Kerry, and Galway had the edge. And actually, Galway beat Kerry in the 1963 semi-final. Patty and Donnan got a point to goal with 5 minutes to go. That was 63 we beat Kerry. We hadn't done well against Kerry before, except back in the time of 38. We beat them in a replay. And it's not a fluke if you win a replay in any sport. It's if you win the first time and you might be lucky, they'd say it's a fluke. But if you win the replay, it's not a fluke. So we beat them in 63. We beat them in 64 in the final. Well, we beat them well in 65 beside Matty McDonagh getting an awful belt and down for a while. But he was so hard. He was indestructible, you know, in energy across there. And in 60, we beat them. That was the third time we beat them. We'd beat them in the 57 National League at a time when it had crowds of 50,000 plus and 16 had great prestige. And that was the day that Matty McDonagh got the ball low and he transferred to Seamus Layden, who buried it in the net. And actually, there was great prestige about the American tours at the time. And one of the Galway backs told me once that just before that goal, when Kerry got a point, I think, he turned around and he said to Basco, he said, "We're going to America, you know." And it wasn't Bosco actually who said it, but when the goal went in, one of the Galway backs said to the Mayo forward, he said, "You won't see America," he said, you know. So I think we beat them five times in a row between National League finals and Championship, you know.
You're educating me here, Jim. Would I be right in saying as well that would have been the halcyon days of the Railway Cup as well?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Incredible days.
Well, we called Sean the Master of it. Master played for Connacht in the Railway Cup. And I want to make a point about it here, if I could, lads. He played 13 years in a row. He won three, I think. The provinces were very strong that time. It's like the Sigerson, you know. Galway won six in a row, I think, in the 30s. Mick Rafferty, and of course, the great Mick Higgins, or Mick O'Higgins, but everybody knows him now, and everybody knows his son, Micheál Higgins, born in Galway, and all that. They had a great team. But in the 60s, then, in the 50s, particularly with the Railway Cup, they were hard to win. But, we won more than that. We won a great one in 1952. 50, I think. The Master actually was in UCG. He'd come to a teacher training college. He was a year ahead of me, Holmer, Hertig and St. Pat's. And then he went to Galway to do a BA, although he became a national school principal in that beautifully named national school near Dunmore, Strawberry Hill. You know, Ger. So around that time in the Railway Cup, it was fierce competitive. Dermot Kavanagh, a great Gael from Kilkenny, who's from the same club as Eddie Kerr, and they played together when the Roar and the Steag won their only one in 68. He did a book, a history of the thing. It's going to be posted to me belatedly, because I hadn't time in that 4 years to read it. I think he estimated that the biggest attendance at a Railway Cup final was either 54,000 or 56,000. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of people. Yeah. It's a lot of people. But the master... Jack Mangan played a few times, but Jack had gone to England when he was young. The master made friendships with Willie Casey of Mayo and Pádraig Kearney, who was a lifelong friend, but Pádraig Kearney went to America as early as 54, with Gerry O'Malley, obviously, but also he had a great friendship with Ronan Craven, who came a bit later. Actually, when we won the Railway Cup in 69, Ronan Craven was playing, and then, of course, we didn't win it again until 2014. Tomb Stadium, John Tobin was manager, Aidan O'Shea was captain, and we won it, so we bridged that gap. But, you know, there was only a few hundred people at the game, really.
Can I put something to you, Jim? And you talk about Sean and indeed Frank, and at times maybe Frank is in Sean's shadow, and that's no disrespect.
Yeah, but different lifestyles. Different. Frank was an essentially private man.
Yes.
They loved each other right to the end.
Yeah.
I do know from what family have told me that Frank got his heart attack, Sean cried, and later on, when Frank realised that Sean was very seriously ill, he cried too, you know. And Frank was a very private man. He came from quite distinguished family in Tuam. His father, Jim Stockwell, was a brilliant heraldic artist, I think it was. He could do all these pageants for Corpus Christi's and that, and he was a builder as well. But he was painting and decorator. Frank became a very serious painting and decorator and that. And Francis Stockwell did the same thing. Sadly died a few years ago, and they're still mourning it in Tuam. And rightly so, there's no doubt about it. But they were very different personalities, and Frank probably never in a pub in his life, I think, although he was taking a picture in Mick Cain's in Clonfad one time. I had the picture, actually, but I just didn't have room for it, which can happen, you know. But the Railway Cup was just very special tournament at the time. And I was going to just remember what I really wanted to say there was Sean's friendship with Willie Casey lasted. When the bronze bust sponsored and donated by Tommy Verdon was unveiled in Tuam on a magnificent night, I introduced Micheál Ó Muirchertaigh, who did the honours, and I think President... Oh, Joe McDonagh was the President. Yes. Jay, he was there that night too. And all... Carl Flynn Leitrim, they all came back, Willie Casey and that. I recorded on cassette. My God, it's the most valuable recording ever. Unfortunately, I've mislaid it. But those men that he was friendly with, Karen and Roscommon, and Naois O'Dowd from Sligo. Naois O'Dowd was a man with a huge reputation. He owned a hotel, I think, in Tubbercurry. And... Sean loved those men all his life. He had this friendship. He went to their funerals and went before them and that. He went for their Hall of Fames and that, and he would go to visit them. Sean had the same grow for the Kerry men. Actually, Mike got my first car in 1969. There was an experimental rules trial match down in Tralee, and we think the experimental rule came in. Sean came down with me, and when we got to Tralee, he said, "I want to visit a shoe shop." He said, "We got there around lunchtime, you know." And I didn't ask him or anything like that. So when we got there anyway, I saw Jade Dowling over the name, the great John Dowling, captain of 55 to beat the Dublin Invincibles. And he wanted to see John Dowling, who had played a Railway Cup game in Tuam. And he went all over Ireland, and he saw people. He saw people. And Keith Dugan, the Irish Times, great writer, and I'm very friendly with him. He asked me last year in a piece he was writing the Saturday Irish Times before the match, he said, "I'm doing a piece," he said, "that I don't enjoy doing," he said, "but the people are asking, is David Clifford as good as Sean Purcell and the others?" And I couldn't answer, because different eras and all that. And he said, "Will you sum up Purcell?" So, now, there is one answer. The Purcell played big games, national interest, and a county final in Galway, fullback, centre-back, midfield, centre-forward, full-forward. But what I said about Purcell at the time was that His place in history, I believe, is secure because when he died, he got the equivalent of a state funeral.
Absolutely.
You, Jerry, you remember it. The marching through Tuam.
Unreal.
The Prez and the Mercy Girls out to form a guard of honour and all these things. I have a picture in the book, a colour picture of Sean Kelly, you know, who idolised the man. He was in his first year anyway, as getting, you know, getting the presidency in GA. And actually, Sean Kelly has received this book. It was a surprise from somebody else, not me, to send it, although I had intended. So, the times they were in, Frank was the quiet one. Frank lost, I think, a quarter, I wouldn't say a third, of his career to injury, but he never complained about it. And he missed out on some big days. He had an accident just before the 1966 final, 56 final, the most iconic kind of goal was 56. But he could not play. But there was this shocking outbreak of polio in Cork. You know, a 6-year-old girl was the first to die. So it spread a bit to the country, but it was mainly in Cork. A lot of people died. And what happened then was that the GA put the All-Ireland final off until October the 7th. So it was played on October the 7th, and Frank could play, and he scored 2-5, the biggest score ever for a 60-minute final. But I'd just like to say one thing about Frank, because everybody sees he was a quiet man and that. I have a quote in the book. Can I read 2 short quotes?
Yeah, absolutely.
Coley MacDonald, you know, Macarawa. Coley said, "At our national school in Chiernia, Canton and Nilon, Connemara, around 1959, Frank Stockwell came to paint the local convent. We knew he was famous and there was great excitement in our schoolyard when he joined us a few times. A very nice man, very friendly with us. From that day on, we all wanted to be footballers and play for Galway." Tommy Joe Gilmore's memory was this. Tommy Joe Gilmore, lovely, lovely man. I love that man, you know, messed up and a legend of Galway football, and not, you know, playing in 3 losing All-Ireland teams does not define him, because he gave a star to play against Cork, the only one that we've no claims for. We got 2-13 with Cork, were magnificent. And Tommy Joe made this lung-bursting run the length of the field. He put it over the bar from the edge of square. He was going to drive it to the net, but the ball hit a kind of a small little turk down or something like that. Anyway, Tommy Joe, "When I was 9 or 10, and already mad keen in football, my father and I cycled to Tuam from Carthun, and we got off our bikes at the square. My father said to me, 'Look at that man crossing over towards the town hall. That's Sean Purcell.' And then Tommy Joe's final line, 'I felt like I had just seen God.'" The rivalry, I just may mention one thing. Paddy Prendergast, I had a great visit to Paddy. Teddy Rillins, our mutual friend from Tuam, organised it down there. I had great times with Sean Purcell. We were on opposite sides in the 48 Connor final drawing room, but we played alongside each other in Connacht's Railway Cup win in 1951. We were great friends. Everyone knows how good a footballer he was, but I was very fond of him through all the years after we finished playing. To meet him for a chat, just the two of us, as we often did, was very special. Now, that doesn't happen today, I don't think.
You're listening to Over the Line on Galway Bay FM, the sporting sound of Galway.
We've had a few scales for that couple of minutes of being on as well. Yeah. Jim, the book is, of course, based on the two boys, Sean and Frank, but it also includes their families.
Yes, it does.
And the people around them.
Yeah.
And particularly St. Gerrard's.
Yes,
because that was the...
Well, he was a star in 46 and 47. Yeah. The two best footballers in Ireland were Sean Purcell and Iggy Jones. And Iggy Jones, they were by a point, I think, St. Pat's Armagh against Gerrard's in 46. And Iggy Jones is quiet in the first half. He had great pace and he had a jink, of course, and all that. And he's a hero, really, to Mio and an icon. But he scored 3-4. He scored 3-4 in the second half. Oh. So, but the Jarrett still ran them to a point. And actually, Vincent McHale, one of their best players, was not playing. That doesn't matter now, I suppose. But he was the captain following year, Vincent, because he was a wonderful player from Ballyvery. Mio had 10 on the 15. Tom Joyce from Wicklow. Tim McHale from Tulsk. And 2 from Galway, I think, the Master and Father Cullum Canavan later on. He was born in Nahalia in the run, and he was corner forward. So Sean, of course, was the Irish...
He was young that time.
Yes, he was, The Irish press said on the Monday... Actually, they said that time, you know, that the boy wonder of Tuam. He was the first to call him that. The Irish press said that the best footballer on the pitch was S. Purcell from Tuam. And I have found that quote as well. I remember the Irish News Archive. I've kind of 60 to 70 newspapers going back 100 years and all that and everything. And I kind of live on it, really. And I could not have done my research without it. I pay €139 a year, and I don't drink or smoke anymore, and I'm too old to go out. So it's well spent. Now, my research could not have been done without that. The Herald Files and the Tribune Files as well, and the photographers Ray Ryan and Joe Shocknessy was a wonderful help to me too. I think Ray Ryan and Joe Shocknessy are just two of the best sports photographers ever, and neither of them are much interested in sport, except Ray Ryan is a mad Manchester City fan. And in hurling, Joe, no interest in hurling, but he photographs hurling better than anybody, really, in a way. And Ray is a brilliant hurler. Ray took a phenomenal photograph when Fergal Moore was captaining Galway. Was it 2012? I'm not sure. We played Cork, maybe the quarterfinal or semi-final. And Fergal managed to come across and cut out this amazing run by Conor Lehan, who was a young star at the time. And the picture was sensational. It was on the back page. And Jarlath Clun, a good friend of mine from Math and Right, rang me up and he said, Jimmy, he said, that's the best picture Ray has ever taken in his life. He said, that picture is sensational. So Ray said to me, what picture? I said, what, the picture of Conor, the full across the page, the top. He hadn't seen it. And he looked at it and he said, what? Should have done nothing much to that. No, that's the way photographers are, I guess.
We had Ray in here, actually. Mm.
Very modest.
He had won we had him on the line, actually, Jim. Yeah. He'd won a national award.
How did you get him to come on? Yeah.
A young chap from Cairn Moore, who's young lad in a wheelchair.
Ah, yeah,
and
yeah,
and
yeah,
the goalkeeper
yeah.
was Cairn Moore's first ever A title.
Yeah, yes, title. Yeah.
But Ray
took the picture of being hugged.
Ray
being hugged,
seen
being hugged.
A young lad going out.
Yes.
And he trained his camera on
he that. Did, yeah.
Ignored the.
Yeah.
And
I can't remember which of the lads did, but he went down and he hugged him.
Yes, it was the goalkeeper.
Well, the goalkeeper,
was,
yeah.
But the thought process yes. of it.
Oh, was that Conor Flaherty, who was a great player, great player. And his dad, Enda, sadly died. But Enda was a great hurler for Cairn Moore.
The thought process speaking that he of, yeah. put into that, mm. and just to say that Joe yeah. Shotless, another man you relate
yeah,
to.
Yeah.
I seen him in action at a Lillis Cup final a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Bowes won it for the second year in a row. There was about six members of the underage academy.
Yeah.
What picture had he in the paper last week?
The six.
The six members of the underage academy with the cups.
Speaking of photographs, on the front of the book has the main photograph of the two lads in tuxedos.
Yeah.
The one at the bottom.
The one they were all talking about on Saturday.
Everybody was talking about on Saturday.
They were.
Is the one where he meets Jack in the dressing room.
Yeah.
Jarlath Fallon.
Yes,
In Croke Park after Galway won All-Ireland in 1998. Yeah. And there's a meeting of eyes.
There is, yeah. There
that
is.
That is. Yeah, brilliant. Now, well, I know that's not actually a photograph.
No,
tell us the story about that.
Well, first of all, I think Jarlath Fallon is one of the greatest footballers I have ever seen in my life. And in his second half, there's an 8-minute... YouTube, I think, of Jazz highlights in the second half. The Morris Fitzgerald point from one wing, the other one over the other side with his favourite left foot, the other side, got a few more as well. And then the two amazing catches that were filmed by Info, I think, got the best one where he was up in the air and he was in the clouds and all that. Jazz took that game by the scruff of the neck. We did not play that well in the first half. And Young Dermot, I was calling him Young Dermot, he's over 50. Young Dermot pammed in the goal and all that and everything else. Paddy Joyce got free on the dot at half time. It kind of cheered us all up and everything, but when Jack came into the game in the second half, it changed. Michael Donnelly was sensational that day. Porrick got the goal. Sean O'Dopair, who always attacked and always got his one or two points, wonderful football. And Kevin Walsh was majestic in the middle of the field, and Sean O'Donnell could do no wrong. But on that, so Jay is what he is. But everybody who knows Jay and Shum, as you do, Jerry, he's a modest, quiet, unassuming man. When he was finished with football, he was the best kind of half marathon runner in the country, I think, in Asia. His career was almost destroyed by injuries, you know. And in fact, at one stage, he found it hard everywhere, and he went playing for Wigan's.
Jay was playing for Wigan's, at the start
Brian
of the
O'Donnell,
professional era.
Where
it was professional to a point where it was semi-professional.
There under the
semi-professional in a way, Jim, where you were rewarded a financial bonus to play professional rugby so many games.
Yeah.
And Jarlath Fallon, I'm open to correction.
Yeah.
He was definitely offered one. Whether he said no or what, I do not know.
No.
But he did. Like, he was a wonderful rugby player as well.
He did. He hadn't given up hope on an All-Ireland medal, but he took the defeat in 1995. He was a leader of the team. I think Kevin was playing, but bravely carrying in injuries and that, and we were missing some good players too. But Jazz switched to rugby for something different, And actually, it's well known that he loved it. He loved it. Do you know when I said Regent Fowler, I was thinking of Brian O'Donnell, who was a wonderful, Brian O'Donnell was a wonderful player and a great Gaelic footballer. I knew Sheila in the Greyhound Tack. Yeah.
Jay also played for Jimmy. Tumen.
He did, yeah. Well, yes, I was at the match. They won the Ordinary Craig Cup. Actually, they won the game against Wanderers City Club, was it Wanderers? Gerard Farrer, the hurler, played in the centre against Tuam.
I think they played. They beat Corinthians in the final.
Yeah.
But Gerard played at full back for Tuam.
Yeah.
Club.
Yeah.
And in a game where I'm. All I said, I was playing against and it was a chase on, and Jarlett was being closed down by two of our guys.
Yeah.
And he just jab lift the rugby
ball. Yeah, he could do it.
Shimmied,
he could do it.
And clear the ball. He was just natural talent.
You were the Tadhg Furlong of rugby that time.
Anyway, get back to
the photograph. Pat Comer's shot. It's iconic. Till Sunday. Oh, what a man. He's a free spirit, Pat.
Oh, great.
But, you know, I don't apply the word genius, but as a filmmaker, he's a genius. I saw twice the documentary that Pat made about the blood and the bandage in Cork, you know, and Fuilleagh's and Bindallon. Wonderful piece of work. And Donal O'Grady was brilliant on it, too. And I like Donal O'Grady very much, you know. I was involved with John McIntyre, who was the boss of the sports stars for years and years and years. And I remember the night Donal O'Grady was up. Alan Kearns was in as well. I think he was having a big trip to Africa. So Donal O'Grady got his fee, of course. That was private always between John McIntyre and everybody else. John McIntyre just gave sterling service to that Sports Stars Awards all his year. And some of the journalists were maybe retired and all that. You can get it. But anyway, Alan Kearns was there as well. And we found out afterwards, well, John told me that Donal O'Grady presented the cheque with the cross signature, whatever, to Alan Kearns that night. You know, it's a wonderful thing. Actually, Eamon Dunphy did the same thing.
Yes.
Eamon Dunphy did the same thing. And I know one other person did it same, but I can't remember at the moment. But anyway, Pat Comer had this image. The master goes over, the hands are out, he puts his left hand on Jazz's shoulder. The master had a phenomenal opinion of Jazz, a footballer, because he couldn't tell him, because nobody can tell Jazz. Jazz would walk away if you said to him, Jazz, play great girl, and that. He's like all the Fallons. They get on with their lives. And then Pat had that shot, and everybody loved it in the year till Sunday. And Jazz smiling, he knows it's coming. Jazz had great respect for Sean. And Jazz had a great quote one time when somebody interviewed him from Dublin. I can't remember who it was. And he was asked about Sean Purcell. And he said that his best memory of him, he said, because he hadn't seen him play, best memory was that he had a personal memory, and he said he would never forget it. When Jazz started, I was a postman in Tuam. He used to deliver the post to Sean Purcell.
To the person's shop.
And he knew who it was. So Jay knew what the master was, and the master knew how good Jay was as well. And he just went in and he gave him the hug, and Pat gave me the photograph, you know, and he gave me permission to use it. I rang Jay, I asked him for his permission, and he said he'd be privileged and that and everything like that. And he spoke magnificently at the launch, beautiful. But John O'Mahony spoke magnificently too, and he's had health problems, and he needed and does need our prayers. But you know, we had Gareth O'Toole, Martin O'Keara. Gareth O'Toole, the whole room fell in love with Gareth O'Toole. Living, mocking suspicion. But Pat Comer gave me that. He gave me the Tom Pook Dillon footage. My name is Tom Pook Dillon. I played for Galway for 10 years. And then he said everything else that he wanted to say, as if he had learned the script off by heart for such a private man. I had a day with him a good while ago. He's a beautiful man, and Tom Dillon is an icon of Galway football. He's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful man. And just shortly after Pat met him, Pat didn't know him, but he knew of his importance. Pook met him welcome in his house. Clare was the farmer there at the time. Pat loved that, and he offered it to me because he didn't know that would he ever replace Forage, you know. And he did it because when he met Tom Pook Dillon, he just couldn't get over him. So he did it. So I rang Jay, and he said he'd be privileged to do it. It was something, I think, lovely and evocative about the fact that it was a black and white photograph.
Which often can tell a different story.
Yeah. I worked with, in earlier life when I was in Montrose and Dublin, I worked with some great graphic artists. The best I've ever worked with is a girl called Siobhan Finnerty from Rochford Bridge. She works for KPW in Dublin. She's the senior design graphic artist there now. And She worked for Seamus Finnerty and was doing the annuals and all that in recent years. And when she did my book, you know, I left everything to her, because everything I said to her, she had a different idea, and her idea was a lot better as well. And I loved the feel of it. I loved the typesize and all that and everything. I couldn't have done the book without Siobhan. She's on holidays now with Darren, her colleague, two desks down, and he's her husband and their baby, Emily. So Pat gave it to me with permission to use it. Jay gave his permission to me to use it. Phenomenally, at the launch of the book, a huge amount of people were not talking about me or Sean or Frank. They were talking about the photograph. Yeah, they were talking about the photograph.
Speaking of the launch, Jim, on Saturday, I think you said to us you thought you might sell 100 books at
it. Yes, yeah, yeah.
How many did you sell?
Well, just under 600 on the day. There's a print run of 1,000, and we're up now around the 9,000 committed, and some people bought 4 and 5 books. Like the great Frank Lynn from Milton was probably going on 87 or 88 now. He bought 5. Yeah,
tell you what, he's looking well for
he's
that
looking
kind
well,
of
he's age. Looking well. I wish he'd kind of had his stylish hair as well. Now that. He's himself and my beloved brother-in-law, Tony Murphy, is... they are the people who run all the tidy towns in Milltown, along with great help from others and everything. But Frank's dynamic man. He has a brother, Martin, who was the secretary of the UCG club when they won the Sigerson in 1960, when George Glynn from Kilconnelly was captain. And, you know, Christy Terrell and Pat Donnan and End and all those, they were on that team. They were invincible. And Frank wanted to sign a book for his brother, Martin, in Dublin, for his son, Princes, who captained my parish, Milltown, to the county final in 2007 and 2008. I can remember Shaw Carton in one, Weaver in the other. And Tom Gilmore actually was great friends with Frank. Tom volunteered to hold the 5 books that Frank had bought, and he said, "Jim will be out for a cup of tea." He always comes out for a cup of tea. He said, "Didn't know how to put on the kettle himself," or anything. He said, "You sign them then, and I'll drive out to Milltown and give them." So there's a bit of that going on, you know. We had four or five people who were into their 80s and who all look better than me and are in great form. And we had Anthony Crow from Briarfield, who's heading for 91. He looked like a teenager. He's still at the cows and everything out there, and he's good at farming. Well, he's what they call a tasty farmer. Yeah. You know, it was great.
Every which way you turned within the group.
Yeah.
And I was there for most of it.
Yeah.
And for the little bit of a pint after.
Yeah.
Every place you turned.
Yeah, as everybody
was
did.
Somebody that was more famous than the person
Well, late in the night, somebody told me they'd taken a picture with a camera phone of Tony Hannah in the middle, Billy Joyce, Tommy Joe Gilmer, two other gobble edges, I can't remember or whatever, you know. But Tony Hannah was to come down to the launch, because he is a friend and partner, as his brother Michael Hannah, a very high profile solicitor firm in Dublin. Robert Purcell, he was a friend of Robert, and Robert was a defence solicitor. You know, Robert is actually defending Brendan Mullen at the moment, and he has other very high profile cases. But the double tragedy came, and after young Rory was lost at 18, Michael Hannahan in the tribute in the Log Assizes Etiquette, which I've reproduced with his permission at the back, said that Robert succumbed to a broken heart. Now, his sister Louise, champion swimmer, 2 sports stars awards, played water polo for Ireland. Actually, Sean has 12 grandchildren who are excelling in sport. Goal will be playing against Sam McCartan at the weekend.
Exactly.
And Lucy McCartan, you know, soccer. Yeah. Simon Kerr is the number one Irish tennis player, played Davis Cup. Yes. He's a professional on tour, maybe living out a suitcase.
And his brother is a brilliant golfer.
He's a great golfer. He's a scratch golfer, Gareth.
Yeah.
And he was a star player for Shandona when they won the intermediate last year.
And Sean Purcell's daughter, Mary.
Yes,
was around school.
Married to Tom Kerr,
Married to Tommy Kerr.
Tom Kerr was one of the people with the Tony Hannahan group.
Yes, I was talking to him.
It's amazing how, to be honest, Sean's family.
Yeah.
Married people, you know, in sporting limelight and in political
limelight. I'll tell you why, George, and Jim will agree with me here. Not one of that family, you couldn't but say, were absolute dotes.
They are. They're sweethearts, and they love Tuam, where they were born, and they love Ballygaddy Road. Yeah. They love Ballygaddy Road.
Would that not that quality that stem from the man himself? And have been lucky enough to get to know him.
Yes.
To get to know him.
Yeah, he was much loved.
I got to know Sean Purcell. I knew who he was. I'd heard him.
And their mother, Rita.
And their mother, Rita Shannon,
How I got to know the man was at the Greyhound track.
Of course,
Simple and straight.
I'll tell you, George, hold that thought, because I want to talk about Greyhounds and Sean Purcell and George.
You're listening to Over the Line on Galway Bay FM, the sporting sound of Galway.
Now we're going to continue with our discussions with Jim Kearney about his new publication, yeah. Sean Person, yeah. and Francis Frank Stockwell. Mm. And we'll talk about Francis in a minute, Jim, if you don't mind. Mm. But one of Sean Person's great loves was greyhounds.
Yes, yes. And he trained greyhounds, and of course he's great friends with the dogs, with John Tobin, and especially Joe Lynch, who was a college's athletic champion. He was in goal in my time, and of course he was a terrific midfielder for the CBS when we won the B Championship in 66. And Joe, of course, has had great dogs himself, and his brother Jerry and that. Sean's best dog was Star Bright. And a few weeks before the Oaks final in 59, Star Bright and Star King ran the double. Star Bright and the Waterford track record holder called Last Landing were joint favourites of 2-1 for the Oaks. Sean Bitch was
the Irish Oaks.
Sean Bitch was on the inside, I think. The other dog, the Waterford track record called Last Landing, was in the inside. Sean was in trap five. Last Landing got away slightly better, and it was a thrilling race according to the Irish Independent. But Last Landing just got ahead. And Sean's dog, Star Bright, known as Queenie in the family, she ran her heart out, and she was pipped like in the line. She couldn't pass out the good dog that win it. Sean wasn't happy. He wasn't that kind of orient like that, but he did say she was the best that ever ran. But he loved greyhounds, and I just mentioned this. Ciarán Kilkenny, 7 All-Ireland medals with Dublin, is within the line of descent. Sean's mother was Nora Kilkenny, and John Kilkenny would be Sean's first cousin, and he played with Dublin in all grades, and he's the first cousin of Sean, and he's the father of Ciarán Kilkenny. Now, Ciarán Kilkenny was coming down. He loves the link, and he's been to Tuam three times, and he loves Jay, and Jay loves him. He was on the point of coming down because training was to finish early in Dublin, but actually there was a change by the Dublin manager. Training wasn't until 4:00, and the Dubs are serious again, and you know, nobody misses training. Well, Ciarán's a model professional. He's an iconic, you know, he's a brilliant role model as well in every way, so he wasn't known. But interestingly, George, just talking about Era Jerry, when Jay won his All-Ireland medal, and when that picture was taken, Jay wore number 11. When Sean won in 56 and was the playmaker that day, he wore number 11. And Ciarán Kilkenny has worn number 11, sometimes 10, sometimes 12 and all that. And so there is something iconic about that as well. And Sean played in his favourite position at centre-half forward. He finished his career full forward. He got a lot of goals there. He played full back in the All Ireland semi final, the greatest display probably in 54. Although John Dehickey wrote that Sean, the best he ever saw was in New York in 57. He said that the New York team couldn't beat Sean either physically or with football. But so Sean, when he played in an All Ireland semi final in 57, unfortunately, a slip of the ball by one defender, Galway, could have won that match. Would they have beaten the Great Town team? We don't know, and there's no point in saying it. He played at centre half back when Tuam Stars won the league and championship in 52. He played midfield in many big games, and he was the midfield star of the Hogan Cup in 47. He played centre forward in 50 and he finished his career. So actually, Keith Duggan was taking that on board last year when he said, you know, Sean played all these great games in full forward line and that. But in 56, I have this memory. I was 6, and I remember my father getting up very, very early in the morning to walk down or to cycle down to Milltown, where Willie Buck, my godfather and local shopkeeper and county councillor and all that, and one of the finest men my family ever knew, he was doing the driving on that. So I remember my father going off, but I don't remember the game. I don't remember my father coming home. But in 57, the semi-final, Eric Ryan kicked a point. We should have won it, I suppose, really. But and Cork beat it by a point. And I remember crying on the old Pi radio, you know, because there was no television. Actually, we didn't have electricity that time either. In 59, we got electricity in Milltown, and we got a cinema in Milltown. And but I'd just like to make the point, around that time, and Garger Tui has talked about as well, things were surprisingly good in Tuam, because the sugar factory, we kept things going, and we had... We had a marvellous musical heritage. You know, Sarah and Rita Kane, now Dolores, and Matt and Sean are there too. They were on television programmes in RT the minute in 62 or 61, whatever RT opened, you know. And one of the most renowned radio programmes of all time was Cayley House, and of course, even as children, the nation listened. And Sean O'Murica, who presented that programme, he spoke with mellifluous tones, you know. He's the uncle of Jerry Murphy. From the side of the hill, I think, in Knockmare.
Yeah.
Around Pulna Hallier, someplace like that.
Caltrell.
You're younger than me. Yeah. You're younger than me. Did you grow up knowing what a figure he was in Irish broadcasting? Did you?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's laid to rest in a very modest grave just at the wall of Dunipatrick.
Yes.
I did know exactly how.
And you heard recordings.
Except for my mother, were great correspondents.
Yeah.
They used to post each other letters and things like that on a regular basis.
Yeah.
But lovely. I certainly did.
Mm. And you heard his voice on a recording or whatever, Jerry.
Yeah.
And you knew that the voice was sweet.
I have recordings of it. Yeah. And I got a CD from RTE that plays a lot of his programmes.
Really? With his voice?
Yeah.
We listen to it together sometimes.
He actually started in the GPO.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Very, very early days. Read the news.
Henry
Street, it was a continuity and things like that. And developed all the way up until he took over Kelly's.
I don't have to ask where you're proud of.
There was a very small little piece of film, you know, Pat Short.
He does this music on the telly. That's right.
And there's one with him at a flagpole somewhere.
Really?
I can't remember off the top of my head. I think it's down in Gory.
He was a stylish dresser.
Yeah, down in Gory or somewhere. Yeah, anyway, listen, we diverse.
Mm.
I'd just like to ask, when I asked Jim, you said about Frank being a very private person.
Yes.
And as I was saying to you before the break, I got to know Sean later in his life.
Yeah.
And I also found him, and I've been in his company many times. Mm. As you say, Frank was a very private being public.
Yes, yeah.
Sean in public was also a private person in the sense that he never spoke about his talent or greatness or anything.
Mm.
But if somebody came to him and spoke to him, and on two occasions I happened to be chatting to the man and he was introduced. Was a people have introduced to Sean Purcell, and the words they said, it was a privilege to meet you, Sean. You know, he did not tout himself as what he was, a wonderful sportsman.
He never liked being in the company of people who would say, God, we're shocking this year, Sean. Yes, we can't even win Connacht. And your man, what are they doing with your man? Sean never liked, he never spoke ill of a colleague, Tuam Stairs or Galway, or of an opponent ever. I just tell one story. When I was a young and very immature sports journalist, started in 1968, I said the wrong thing one time about a Galway footballer. I didn't know it at the time, you know. Actually, I never heard from that Galway footballer. He probably didn't read it. He wasn't living in North Galway or whatever. But Sean came in to me. Sean came into me in the office. Mike Rafe used to call me Jimmy, Sean's great friend, and that. And Sean said, the only time he ever said to me, Jimmy, he said, can I have a chat with you? He said, yeah. So he mentioned. And he said, the lad was called Joe. He said, Joe won't mind that. He says, you know, that water off his duck back. He says, but his mother, his father, his younger brothers, I'm not sure, his sisters, he said, they hurt when this is in the paper. They don't like people mentioning it afterwards.
Maybe some of today's pundits should remember the same sort of sentiment.
It's the siblings. It's the same group. It's the brothers and sisters.
From the era Sean came from.
Yes, yeah.
It was respect everybody. See the good in everybody.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He said that that time that all siblings would suffer. It was hurt.
Families,
I was guilty, and all I can say in my defence was that I was immature. I was 18. But actually, it was... I was hurt enough then myself to know, well, of course, where it came from as well, you know, and I just know now that Sean was right, really. You know, I probably committed a few sins with it or all that, and everything, but I try not to. And actually, I don't talk to footballers and managers anymore about football if I'm privileged enough to meet them. You know, I've great respect in that. That comes with age, you know, talking Keele-ish. But I'd just like to say one other thing, lads, and I know we're going out of time. Did Sean Purcell and Frank Stockwell and Jack Mangan and Pook Dillon and Big Matty and Evers, well, we leave out Big Matty because Matty did play with the three in a row team. Did they influence the three in a row team? It's impossible to say, but the three in a row lads said it themselves, you know. I'll just tell you about Noel Tierney from Milltown, again, a man who has needed our prayers a lot in recent years, and we said them for him. You know, he's still like... It's an iconic image of Tierney going up in the air, you know. It's different now when the full forward is back. back and playing left back position. But Noel played for the Galway Miners in 1960, one of the greatest minor teams I ever said saw. Sean Cleary, Bellegar was the captain. So Noel played for that team, and they all would play St. Gerrard's in very hard matches, because Gerrard's had a fantastic team that time, you know. Yeah. And they played in the Gerrard's front pitch and that, and it was tough. And Noel Tierney was always marking Sean. And he could have a great respect for him. And Father Kavanagh was training the minors, because he knew them all from Gerrard's, one of the greatest college coaches ever, he's a man down. And Father Kavanagh wanted the minors to be tested physically by the Tuam Stars team. So Noel didn't get anything easy. Now, he said, actually, in a video made a number of years ago by Stephen Casty from Tuam, that he said, maybe Sean, you know, went easy on me. But that wasn't what Jerry Prendergast told me, who's said and all that and everything else. And he had a great growth from. And John Keenan, John and I meet once or twice a year, you know, and he comes into Tuam, you know. I mean, John is one of the people I adore in sport. He was there the last night and all. He went into a hospital recently to have a hip out, and he came back with stents as well. He was welcome to stick him to more. And I rang my great friend Pat Coleman last week. I said, "How's John Keenan?" And he threw away the stick. He said, "So no need to say more." But John went to England because his older brother was farming, and times weren't great, around 58, 59, whatever it was. He'd been a boy wonder playing for Carlin Trial. He went to England, and he loved working in England. He loved getting good pay, of course. He loved going out. He was single. He loved the buildings, and he loved the camaraderie of the lads and all that and everything. But he wanted to come home and be a footballer. So he came home, he met the Galway team, he played against Leitrim, and Purcell was full forward, John was corner forward, and they scored 4-11 between them. And Keenan thought he wasn't going well. Purcell came over and he said, you're going powerful. He never forgot.
Can I just mention, you have a chapter on Francis Stockwell.
Yes.
That's Frank's son.
Who was
another great Gerrard's man, and another great Tuam Stars man.
Much loved.
Played an awful lot of soccer for Tuam Celtic.
He loved that too.
He was almost a reflection of his father.
He was, yeah. In that he was private too.
Yes.
He had a great sense of humour. But if you were to compliment him, or even if you wanted to make small talk with him, he'd go off on the bike and he'd head off. And he was so much loved that his funeral was extraordinary. Yeah. He died about 60, I think, Stocky was born 71 and all that. And oh, sure, you know, God. But you're not going to age across there, Stocky.
Yeah, and, you know, we all knew him very well. And actually, I met his lovely wife, Olga.
I'll go to from Downing Street. Yeah. Chop, I bet you know George. One thing, Jerry, please, and George, I have enjoyed your company and this programme so much. I wish you went on for another hour. If I'm known for anything in my life, it's for having too much to say, so I'm sorry about that. But can I say that everybody who pays €20, the books actually will be in Galway by Wednesday, I think.
Yes.
There's four outlets in Tuam, and there will be five. Everybody who pays €20 for this book, it will go to Tuam Cancer Care, wonderful, wonderful organisation, you know. Yeah.
Well, it's a great publication. Yeah. It's a mine of information.
Yes.
You could definitely throw it on a coffee table and let people go through chapter by chapter, George. Yeah.
Breaking news, Jerry, in the world of soccer.
Yes.
Kylian Mbappe has informed PSG he will not take the add-on year in his contract, which means most likely he will be sold this year
to
Real Madrid, in my book.
Well, there you go.
Won't get a sale price production.
That means Harry Kane comes to Old Trafford.
Yes,
Anyway, listen, lads, both of you, great to be in your company. Enjoyed it thoroughly.
Yes.
Really enjoyed Saturday, I have to say.
And lovely for me to meet Tom Gilmore's friend, Doc.
We met a whole bunch of people there. I was shocked at the number of people that were there.
Yeah, I was too.
I was definitely surprised, but then when I think back on it, why would I have been?
All of the people
that you have dealt with over the years from various
times.
They
are remembered, Jerry. They are remembered.
Yeah, you know? And there's lots of them. And, you know, we've only touched a very small part of your own life.
Yeah, yeah.
And long may it continue. And I was told to tell you, now is the time to write the other book.
Which
one? And the other book is the book about yourself.
Oh, no, Jerry. No,
because there is an awful lot of information your time and your career.
Let me only say this, Jerry. Everybody's ambition is to be remembered. Mine is to be forgotten about.
It's hard to forget of George, isn't it?
Yeah. One should never forget.
Absolutely.
We'll see you in Ballybrit, George. And
we'll see you around the town sometime or other.
And wonderful that you were with me.
Anyway, listen, that's it for this week. Really a pleasure to talk to Jim Kearney. And like every other week, we could talk for another full hour.
You're listening to Over the Line on Galway Bay FM, the sporting sound of Galway.